Okay, so this is Annie. And looking here, you only have one variant on gluten, right? So yours isn't terrible, but DQ8 is an important one. So it's heterozygous. So I think it's important, but not as critical as other people that you're 100%. But, you know, I would. I don't know what my, well, what are mine? Yeah, I have a couple like that too. So dairy.
So go gluten-free for sure.
I would say gluten-free. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not as adamant with you because you don't have as many as some other people, but I just think if you have any of the genetic tendencies, okay, you're playing with fire if you're eating gluten. Just my opinion. Same thing here with dairy. Like when I talked to Kathy earlier, she had two two homozygous red ones. That's what I don't like about this particular report. It doesn't give me the red, the green. And it's harder for you as a person who hasn't read it before to understand it, where the other one, it's real easy. You know, you see the red, green, and yellow, and it's kind of like a kid learning about a stoplight, you know?
So my screen shut out after you said, yeah, definitely do gluten-free. So anything else I missed?
Oh, dairy.
Dairy, okay.
The second section in dairy. Yeah, you have two snips that for that.
So dairy's an issue?
Dairy's an issue. Yeah, you shouldn't be doing dairy.
Okay.
All right. You know, on the other hand, there's your caffeine. That's only one of the caffeine metabolism ones, but so far caffeine isn't an issue. Beta carotene a little bit, but you're mostly converting your beta carotene to a vitamin A. I would say that if you're exposed and if you're traveling, that maybe extra vitamin A would be helpful just to support your immune system. But on a regular basis, you know, occasionally is fine. You have a few problems with breaking down histamine. So do you get a lot of, you know, allergies, skin rashes, hives, foods that you respond to?
I don't. I get stuffy sometimes with red wine, not horribly. Nothing that feels like a massive reaction. My skin's pretty good.
It's not terrible, but you know, you've got several that would predispose you. So avoid things that seem to cause that would be the thing. You do have the MAO. And again, I don't, without looking at my other sheet, my cheat sheet, let me see over here. Let us see in this one, MAO. I get confused between the warrior and the worrier. Here we go. So you have, let me go back to yours. You're an MAO RS3810709. So we'll look it up on this chart. This one even doesn't even show it. MAOA. Okay, so let me see which numbers you are. This is, I'm not in my element here because it's not the typical one that I look at. You're a TT. Yeah, it's a different gene it's looking at than what we have on the other report. So again, you know, it's going to take a little bit of research for me to read this report. I haven't done it before. Let's see. I'm going to look for PEMT. Okay. Yeah. So phospholipids, important, right? Important for memory and important for the myelin sheaths and the sheaths that surround your nerves. So phospholipids, super, super important. So I would look at sunflower lecithin as an addition to smoothies, soups, nut milks, whatever else you might need, dressing.
Okay.
It functions as an emulsifier as well, which is really nice because, you know, it keeps the things from separating the water and the fat. Have you done your fatty acid test yet? What's my fatty acid?
I think I did.
All right. So when we have a full appointment, let's look at that in relationship to this, because this particular, the FADS ones will relate to your breakdowns on there.
Okay.
Pantothenic acid. Have you done a Dutch yet?
I don't think so.
Okay. When you do your Dutch, we'll be able to see what's going on with these pathways, but you may need some B5 pantothenic acid if this is manifesting. And if we look at your steroid hormones and we see some imbalances there, we can get them corrected with the B5.
Okay.
Okay. And this is related to that same situation, you know, the acetyl-CoA, the phospholipids could help with that as well. And meditation and yoga. Get you into parasympathetic. Okay, so ApoE. Let me just see compared to... Okay, let's look at the ApoE here. Yeah, it's going from one report to... I can whip through these because I've been through these a million times. Let's see, where's the ApoE? Okay, so... let's see if we can figure this one out. We've got another piece of paper. Okay, so... RS429384... And it should be a C is the risk, and RS7412, and the C is the risk. Okay, so I'm just going to go back to yours, and the 429, which is the E, you don't have anything in. You're a TT, which is good, but here you're a CC. So you are a 3-3, which is the most common. So ApoE status, for what it's worth right now, is a 3-3. So you're not a risk factor because you don't have a 4, but you don't have the protection of a 2. What it means is you don't have an increased risk of Alzheimer's or heart disease based on that gene.
Okay.
Yeah. SHMT. Okay, I'm just going to take a quick look. There's a lot of glutathione stuff. So, and you have a lot of glutathione SNPs. The Dutch test, when you do that, will tell us your actual glutathione status. But based on this, it looks like you have a lot of potential. And again, I want to, before giving you some ideas of what to do, I want to have that genetic detoxification report, because this shows all of these SNPs. And the other one shows a lot more of the ones that have been found to be clinically relevant.
Okay.
So, but yeah, glutathione might be an issue. It might be something where we have to look at that.
And that's the detox.
For detox, right? Mm-hmm. Same with SOD catalase. You don't have much in the way of SOD catalase in terms of the homozygous, but you have a couple of heterozygous, you know, the yellow ones. So yeah, and a detox is important, right? I mean, so glutathione might be one that we'll look at. We'll look at the other report as well. And pesticides, like really avoiding pesticides is super important, and it's gonna have an impact on your cardiovascular system if you don't, and strain your glutathione levels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Methionine. There's a lot here. Let's see. Here's more MAO. MAO, which ones did I write down before? RS38. Okay. You got a double there. I think I already looked at that one, the MAO. It's a different one. Yeah, it's a different one. MAOB. Okay there. some of the GABA SNPs. So the tendency to be a hypervigilant, the tendency to get irritated or anxious, does that ring a bell?
Depends if I'm driving.
Yeah, so oxytocin, you need more hugs, girl.
Okay.
Yes, go get more hugs. Some glue, some problems with your dopamine, right? Dopamine might be an issue. Neuroplasticity. And I'll be curious to see how, you know, if you set up a session with Lisa to go over this too, because she's familiar with this test. She likes this test. She does it a lot. And, you know, when you get used to a certain test, you can run through it much more quickly than if you haven't been through it before. I'm looking for some of my standouts. Ah, nitric oxide. Okay. Vasodilation. You've got some SNPs here, and I think, you know, arugula is a good one. If you want to look at there's a list in one of our spring into vitality, but I'm losing it after 2 days of doing this all day and I haven't eaten anything yet today. So,
oh my gosh.
Vitamin D and A. So A, you know, it's not a terrible pattern, but, you know, making sure you're always getting enough beta carotene rich foods so that you overcome the ability that a slight sluggishness in your ability to convert it to vitamin A.
Okay. And
if you're exposed, if there's, you know, an outbreak, if other people around you are starting to get a cold or flu, up your vitamin A.
Okay.
Okay. D's, you're looking good. Autophagy looking good. Overall, there's a lot of really positive stuff in here. Everybody has something, just so everybody knows. Nobody has all greens. And it doesn't mean that you can't be healthy. Huh, you don't have, it doesn't look like you have, like the people with the CACNA1C often have real sensitivity to EMFs, but you don't look like you have any of those.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like the cigarette smoke that you were mentioning for some people, and going through the whole carbon monoxide experience, I am like hypersensitive to smells like chlorine and gasoline.
Yeah.
Things like that, perfumes, like, oh, I just get instant headaches.
Let's look for the, because I'm not familiar with the layout of this. I might have missed it, but control F, that was the NAT. Sorry, NAT2, let me go. Oh, boy. Okay, I got to do this. It's not, let me get out of there. No, it's not finding it. When we get the other one, when we get the other report, I'll be able to really hone in on that because the organization of it is a little bit better for that particular thing. I know I lost my place. Let me go from the bottom. Yeah, some of these genes I'm not familiar with and haven't even looked at. Let me just look up the CYPs. CYP. Okay. CYP1A2, that's the caffeine metabolism and estrogen. You know, it doesn't really show a lot of the phase one detox genes. It's kind of interesting that this report doesn't show a lot of that.
Hmm.
Let me see what else. CYP. No, the only one it's showing is the 1A2. You know, would I rather, I'd like to see all of these others. These, and then than NAT2, but I'm not seeing them on here easily.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we'll do that when we look at the other report. That's why I like the other report. Okay.
Cool.
All right. Great. I'm glad you made it.
Yay. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. All right. Okay. Who else is left? I think we got everybody. Is anybody here that wants their report read that hasn't been done? Anybody? All right. Anybody here that has questions?
You do coaches?
I have.
I'm just kidding.
I have 20 minutes left. 22 minutes left.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. It's Marilyn Salsky. And my question likely is pretty basic, but on my genetic genie, I've got the very bottom variants not found in your file. So I guess those are whatever markers that I don't have. Is that the way I should?
Yeah. So did you get your testing done recently?
Yeah.
So what happened was that for whatever reason, 23andMe.
Okay, you did explain that before, so I just didn't understand. So that part's okay. And then when I go to my genetic detoxification, when it says for the genotype and then it says not geotyped, what does that mean when there's absolutely, I've seen it on other people's reports too, but does it just mean that, what does that mean?
The same thing. They just report it differently on genetic genie versus the genetic detoxification. They say not genotyped. It means that it's not there.
Okay.
They can't do it. It's not there.
Okay, so.
If you look at somebody's comparatively, I'm looking for yours. Were you yesterday?
I was yesterday and I had it loaded up to,
Yeah. So I'm just pulling it up so I can show you. I want to make sure you're clear on it.
It's likely down a bit. I haven't loaded everything into,
Okay.
It's okay.
There, genetics. Yeah, so on your genetic detoxification report, I just want to make sure I'm clear on what you're asking about. It's like...
Where I see the not geotyped.
Yeah, that's a good old 23andMe stopped doing it. If you look at yours versus mine, right, all mine are there. Just me? Yeah. I mean, there's an occasional one that's not genotyped, but it just that they stopped doing some of them.
It just explains that.
It's not as complete as we would like it to be.
And another question that I have, again, it's on the genetic genie report. When you did go through a couple of other clients of yours on the detox profile one, it seemed like the page they had was much longer than the one that they gave me, in the sense that I've got like half a page, it wasn't the detox profile, it was the methylation profile. So is that just because everyone has a different methylation?
I think, profile? Well, let me find yours again so I can.
I just have curiosity questions really more than anything.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And it is curious. I don't see your genetic genie methylation. Let me just see what you're looking at. Oh yeah. So I think what they did was if they weren't genotyped, they just changed the reporting. And instead of having all the blanks that says not there, they're just not there.
Yeah.
So you have a short one versus a longer one, which had them. Like if I looked at mine was like one of these. I didn't open mine. So anyway, that's exactly what it is. It's like they got smarter. They started doing the test in a way that they just don't show all the blank ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I guess my next question is on the genetic genie one that you just closed. I had lots of detailed information from them on that report. But when I turned to the other report on detox profile.
Yeah, they don't have any.
They don't have any. Okay. So I didn't miss anything.
That's why I created these pages.
Yes. They're great. Right? Thank you.
And I explained it all. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That's all I've got. You've been great. Unbelievable. This such a session, both of them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm glad you were here. Anybody else have any comments? I would love to do one more, but I would really rather not. Who had to go to? Sandra.
So what is, what is important to somebody like me when they say risk allele, AGT, what?
Okay, so when they report, let me pull one up just so we can look. I'll pull mine up just because. Is that mine? Oh, it's genetic genie. I don't even know where it is anymore. I'm losing
it. It doesn't matter. What's it's important to know.
Yeah, so it is. Yeah, that's what I want to show you. So the risk allele. So what they're saying is this is what you are. So this says I'm a TT. The risk allele is C. Therefore, I'm green. Here it says I'm an AC. The risk allele is A. I have one A. Therefore, I'm a yellow. Here I have, I'm a TT. The risk allele is T, therefore I'm a red. That's what determines what color they show you.
Oh, okay.
See what I mean? If you have no risk alleles, you're a minus minus. If you have one risk allele, you're a plus minus. And if you have both risk alleles, you're a plus plus.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah. And the second question is, what's the difference between supplementing with glutathione and NAC?
Well, NAC is a precursor to glutathione, right? So your body can take in the NAC and use those pieces to convert to glutathione. Some people do better doing it that way. They let the body do it at its own pace. Some people have breakdowns in the pathway between NAC and glutathione, so they have to do the glutathione. Does that make sense?
So if I cannot raise my levels of glutathione with glutathione, then I should try NAC or?
No, the opposite. If you weren't able to raise your glutathione with NAC, then you'd want to go to the glutathione.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of giving precursors as much as possible and let the body like divvy it out when it needs it. So rather than giving like say sex hormones, rather than giving, I don't know, progesterone or estrogen, give it
you would do pregnenolone.
Yeah, and give it and let the body do it. But sometimes the body can't do it. It doesn't do it efficiently, right? And so then we go in. 5-HTP goes into serotonin. Well, there's no way to give a person serotonin. It just doesn't go that way. So we give them 5-HTP to convert. Mm-hmm. But melatonin, sometimes I look at what somebody's done, but I'd rather give somebody 5-HTP, which converts to serotonin, which then converts to melatonin, and give the B6 as a cofactor to do that. So then the body makes as much melatonin as it thinks it needs. And if that works, great. But if it doesn't, then there's probably a breakdown in that pathway. So we'd go right to melatonin if we really felt like they needed it. So I always like to give body the building blocks. Like who asked me before, Rich, about HCL? It's like rather than give you HCL, I'd rather give you the building blocks of HCL and help your body to be able to make it itself. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can get in trouble if you give the body a preformed substance that it's supposed to make and you give it the wrong amount. You give it too much. Like people take DHEA, for example, and I have no problem with giving DHEA in amounts that the body would make, but a lot of people are taking like 25, 50, even 100 milligrams of DHEA at a time. What that does is gives the body the message, we're good. You don't have to make any more. There's plenty. And it shuts it down. Same thing with thyroid. If somebody's taking too much thyroid hormone over time, the pituitary is going, oh, thyroid's doing great. I don't have to stimulate it anymore. So it lowers the levels of TSH. It no longer stimulates the thyroid. And then the thyroid gets like, it gets atrophied, so to speak, right? Because it's not being stimulated. So we always want to replace just right amounts. And there's a lot of guesswork involved. There's a lot of, you know, thinking involved, but it's a matter of for each person, what's that right amount? And we don't want to turn your body off and go, hey, good, we're good. I don't have to work on that anymore. Right. Yeah.
Great. It's been great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And thank you for being here all day. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lou.
Okay. Well, I was looking through my report because I noticed some people had in their report where about dairy, And since I didn't do the preferred report because I was using Ancestry DNA, I'm not seeing anything that indicates dairy in this.
Yeah, so, you went from that report. So, well, wait. You know, you had the metabolic healing report. Let me see. Let me pull it back up again. Because it may be in there. There's a couple of them. The FOLR, the folate receptors, they get damaged by dairy. So that if you have one of those, forgive me for not remembering what you have, because it's been a long day. Long 2 days. No worries. No, not at all. I
don't have a big heading that says dairy. So
no, you wouldn't have a heading that says it. It's just the way that the reports do it differently. So let me just see. Lou. Okay. Got it.
So we're looking for
FOLR. And again, I don't know, you know, when I don't know if the ancestry is missing some of the things that 23andMe does or not. So I'm going to go to this is your nutrigenomics report here. And I go open in a new window and I can go control F, F-O-L-R. Let's see.
Okay, I just found something. Yeah.
Yeah. So yours are minus, that's fine. Now the other one, let me look at whose do I still have open that had, here. The other one was MCM6, may or may not be there. One of the things you can do is look in your I don't know if you uploaded it, I'll look. Let's see, Annie's, it's yours. It might be in your profile. I don't know what all these are. There was a text file that you downloaded, the raw data, and then you uploaded that to the Genetic Genie. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes.
If you go in there,
okay,
write this one down. This is another one. Let me find it. There we go. Write down I'm going to just copy these and put them in the chat. That way you can just look these up.
Okay.
Copy. Okay, let's see if I can find this. Okay. Whenever I open too many windows, I lose back.
So if I'm minus on these SNPs, then dairy shouldn't bother me. Is that correct?
Well, it's not necessary. There's other things that are involved, but from a genetic standpoint, you don't have the thing that says absolutely not. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Like here. Now, are these related to lactose or is that just a whole different thing?
These two are related to lactose, the MCM6, and then the FOLRs are related to dairy itself. I don't see a casein sensitivity like we have with gluten sensitivity in there. But in general, here's my take on dairy. If you feel great, your life is awesome, your health is amazing, your cholesterol is perfect, your energy is fine, your blood sugar is fine, experiment. If none of those things apply, get rid of it for a few months and then add it back and try after you feel really good.
Okay.
Because the thing is, what we expect is that, I don't have a problem with gluten or I don't have a problem with dairy because you don't have diarrhea, you don't break out in hives, whatever. But what's really happening is when there's foods in there that are not necessarily good for anybody and they're causing biochemical imbalances, they can create havoc in all kinds of areas, right? So dairy, for example, I mean, the saturated fat, the lactose, the bovine growth hormones, the hormones themselves, right? That the cow is producing. That food is meant for a baby cow to turn into a big cow in 6 months. It's got growth factors that are not good for human beings to be taking, especially adult human beings who maybe have hormonal imbalances, right? So just because the gene isn't present that says absolutely you shouldn't have that doesn't mean that food is good for you. So if I were you and I were in your situation with an elevated cholesterol and some inflammatory stuff, I'd go off of it completely. Ice cream was my favorite food in the whole wide world, I will tell you. No. I would die for ice cream. when you see my video that I put out tomorrow, you'll hear my story about ice cream. Yeah. That was like my favorite food in the whole world, but I don't want it anymore. I don't want what it is in my body. Right. So,
well, I do like cheese, and I know that they were saying certain cheeses were better than others. And
they are. Know. Who's the they? The they is the establishment who knows how to keep sick people sick and knows how to make people who are in trauma come back to life. They are not people who know how to work with the rest of us who have chronic irritating problems that lead to slow deaths. They don't know how to help people prevent them from getting cancer. Nobody in the they world knows that, right? So I'm of a feeling that we need to do our very best. And until you get your health back to where you want it to be, and then you can experiment and say, well, I'll try a little of this and see if it hurts. But the problem is even with that, when you try a little of this to see if it hurts, it doesn't necessarily hurt right away. It hurts you downstream in invisible places in your body that you have no way of being able to look at. So, you know, on the one hand, yeah, looking at the genetics, I find that people who are having trouble, like, oh my God, do I really need to get off of gluten? Well, your genes say you can't handle it. But just because your genes say you can handle it doesn't mean that the imbalances in your body, where you are now, based on everything else, your environmental factors, your life. So I'm a big fan of everybody getting off of the top six, at least temporarily, and then you can add some of them back. Gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, and then sugar. So seven. Major changes by looking at that. And then if you're going, wow, I feel great. My weight's where I want it to be. The cholesterol's where I want it to be. My joints feel great. Hey, I think I'll try having a couple of peanuts every now and then. But anytime you go back to the things that hurt you in the first place, eventually they will. So people say to me, well, what do you mean that, you know, you see diabetes reverse or this condition reverse? If that person starts eating sugar again, the diabetes will come back. I'm like, right. If you break your leg because you fell down the stairs and then it heals and you fall down the stairs again the same way, you'll likely break your leg again. Does that mean that your leg didn't heal? No, you just put the trauma in that caused that to happen. And we're putting in micro traumas every single day by what we eat and all that. We can control what we eat. We can't necessarily control the environment. I mean, we could do the best we can in our indoor environment, but we can't control that our neighbors sprayed pesticides on their lawn yesterday and we have to breathe it. So we want to reduce the toxic load down to a minimum in the areas we can control so that the other stuff is like, oh, no big deal. I went to the mall and I know there's formaldehyde over there, but it didn't bother me too much. I took my extra vitamin C and glutathione before I went to protect my detox pathways. And that's why we're here. And that's why I love to do what I do. And that's why I spend these days doing these exhaustingly tired, you know, because it's from me going from one person to the next, to the next, to the next, you know, it's a lot, but I want you guys to see that, you know, your genes are one part and here's what you got to do lifestyle wise to keep those genes from getting you into trouble. If I would have not done what I've done over the last 30 years, I promise you, I would be obese. I would be on antidepressants and I may have, you know, cholesterol through the roof and be on those kind of meds as well. Based on what I look at is my genes and I look at the eight other kids in my family, one of whom is not even with us anymore. I look at my parents who left us very young and I look at the fact that there's no old people in my family. I am like an anomaly in my family. Like this 64 year old woman who's like boundless energy is jumping off crazy things and is, I'm an anomaly in my family, right? I'm one of the elders in my family, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what I want for everybody. And the way I look at it is, I don't have the best genes and it can be done, but it takes dedication and determination. And like, which do you like more? Being alive and comfortable and being around for your kids as they age, or eating cheese? What kind of pleasure do you get from the cheese that you can't get from having this amazing life?
Well, I have no problem going off the gluten because it was easy to see that when I ate pasta, I just wanted to keep eating pasta and pasta and pasta and pasta. I mean, you know,
I know that feeling.
you sure you don't want to have a croissant? I'm like, no, I really don't want to have a croissant. I'm fine. You know?
Yeah. I don't need to get into that binge cycle again. Right.
Yeah. I can deal with no gluten. And when you can't have gluten, you can't have cake, you can't have all these desserts. So therefore you're not having the sugar.
That's
because
right.
You're not having the, it goes with it. So, so that's no problem. But I do like a little bit of cheese on my salad.
Okay.
But
so
I can also do without it. I mean,
you can do without it. And there are great substitutes. Like so, Kite Hill, Tree Line. They make these amazing Miyoko's or something like that. They make these amazing cheeses. Last night I had this big salad. It had all kinds of arugula. It had broccoli and cauliflower and all kinds of stuff. And I had this dressing with pumpkin seeds and Brazil nuts and lemon juice. It was delicious. Put it on top and sprinkled some pine nuts. And then I had some Kite Hill, ricotta cheese. I put sprinkles of that on my salad.
So is it made with nuts?
Almonds.
See, but now with the high oxalates, I'm not supposed to be eating almonds. So therefore, I can't have the nut cheeses. So,
okay.
So that's, I'm just trying to figure out what I can eat in terms of some of the substitutions, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just
saying.
Get this, there's a book. Go to Amazon and look for it. There's a book on Amazon that shows you how to make cheeses out of vegetables. And they use they use all kinds of stuff as thickeners, agar and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the name of it. I've ordered several. Let me look to my Amazon account. I have to just go to Amazon and I can look at orders and look at books. Okay, my orders. And if I just look up cheese, search orders, I don't buy cheese, so I'm just going to see the books. So there's a couple of them. Vegan cheeses, simple, delicious plant-based recipes. That one, here, let me take a screenshot. Well, let me just take pictures. There's just these three. So the one of them is about nuts. So you'll skip that one. But there's one from Miyoko that uses, potatoes. You got to be careful with that. But you know, if you ferment potatoes, you might be able to get away with it. But that's
because they say potatoes and even sweet potatoes have oxalates. So,
see, I think it might be this first. No, the first one. Simple plant-based recipes. Some of them are nuts in there, but there were several in there that were made with like cauliflower. You know, you cook up some cauliflower, and then you add some kind of thickeners and you can make cheeses that way. Yeah, it's challenging without the nuts, I get you, but I hear you.
Well,
but it's also
it'll
like
be easier just not to have
just
cheese.
To not have it.
Or not trying to, I mean,
not trying
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But you can do it. You know, when you do this and you make great salad dressing on it and you put some, you know, sprinkle Parmesan cheese, you can make an easy substitute with hemp seeds. And I don't think those are high in oxalates.
No, they're not.
Right. Hemp seeds.
I like hemp seeds.
Yeah. You mix hemp seeds with nutritional yeast and it gives you the cheesy Parmesan type flavor.
Okay. That sounds easy too.
It's so easy. It's like, yeah, it's so easy.
That I can handle. I have both of those on the counter right now. So.
Okay, good. Yeah, just mix them together and just play with, you know, variations and various things you can. I hear you. It takes some challenge to get through it, but it's worth it. It's so worth it.
Okay. My other question is, since I did the Ancestry DNA.
Yeah.
And they test for certain SNPs and 23andMe tests for certain SNPs. Are they testing for some different SNPs so that I should go on and do 23andMe in the hopes of getting some SNPs that are not with Ancestry?
Know that.
Okay.
I don't know that. They probably, but I can't say for certain.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't, I mean, you could call Ancestry and say, do you test for all the SNPs that 23andMe tests for? And see if they give you a straight answer.
Yeah.
But the only way to know that, you know, would be to, if you get us your raw data, Mm-hmm. We can see how many SNPs are in there, and we compare it to how many SNPs are in somebody who has a recent raw data from 23andMe.
Okay.
Right. And if it's, they're both the same numbers, it's most likely they do. If there's like thousands and thousands of differences, then probably not. But.
Well, I didn't know whether to go in and do 23andMe, so we could run it through this other program that you have. But
well, you know, with the one that you have, I mean, it looks like, because I didn't see a lot of not reported on your metabolic healing report that you had. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah, hard to say. I mean, calling somebody like that company, would be good, you know, somebody there in their customer support, or write to them in metabolic healing and say, hey, look, is there an advantage of me doing 23andMe? I did the ancestry. But if you look through that report and you don't see a lot of like not reported, then most mm-hmm. likely you're not going to get much more on 23andMe. Okay. Yeah. The only advantage is, and you can always look up any of the ones that you're not understanding on his thing, you know, mm-hmm. like just get this book and look it up in there.
Okay.
You won't have the easy reference, but you know, if you get it on the Kindle version for $10, then you can just search for the particular SNP you're looking for.
Okay. Do they have a search? Do you have to go search through the book, or do they have a thing on the Kindle version?
No, if you get it on Kindle, you can, you can do a search on there.
Where you can type in whatever it is and it'll pop it up. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely do that. I use the Kindle app on my iPhone or my iPad.
Okay.
Generally, it's better on the iPad because it's a bigger screen and that's a lot of information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. All right.
Well, you got this, girl. We're here for you. You can do this. You can do it.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. If anybody's still on, turn your cameras on and I'll unmute you, and then we'll say goodbye to each other if you don't have any more questions. Unmute all. There's Janet and Jill. Jill was here all day yesterday and today, and yay. Valerie. Yeah, Marilyn, Judy, Lynn, Annie.
Hello.
It's so good to see you all. Paula. Who else? Lou. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for your dedication to your health. This was meant to be empowering, not discouraging, right? Like, you guys are doing it. There's things you have to do that yet to do. And sometimes seeing it on paper that, my genes are not so good. When I saw my genes, I was so grateful that I made the decision 20 years before that or 25 years before that, that I had crappy genes and I was going to do my best to overcome them. Because I really, honestly, I mean, I love my family. I love my sisters, but they're all out of shape and unhealthy. And I'm the oldest. And they have similar genes, right? So let's just take care of it, right? You contribute to the health of the world when you take care of you. You contribute to the health of your family when you take care of you. And we're here to support you. You've got your small group coaching calls coming up. I think it's next week, right? So bring up any concerns or fears or, you know, confusions or anything you need support with. Bring them up on those calls. And, you know, you see that a lot of our coaches are here on the calls because they're learning along with you. They're not just learning along with you. They're getting, learning what's going on for you, right? So just bring it up, right? It's okay for them to bring up questions, right, Jill? Right, Valerie? Lynn? Yeah? And yep. Janet? Yeah. So go ask them questions. They all know that you had these 2 days with us together here, and they're here to support you. And I am too. So, all right. All right, guys. Take care. Much love. Have a great
weekend. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.